Well, we'll go ahead and get started. It's shortly after 2. First item on our agenda is the consent agenda. All items listed on the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a request is made prior to the time the board votes on the motion. So if I can get a...
Second.
Motion to second. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Item number 3 is our public forum. This is a time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health today. Not seeing anybody moving immediately to the microphone. We'll move on to agency reports. Homeward, Eileen Mullen.
Well, maybe before I start this, I'll just mention that Terry didn't give me an extensive update to give you guys. They've been doing some investigations of, they had a pertussis and they had a TB for my ISU. Other than that, we're gearing up for our flu clinics. And so we started getting those advertised and out there. Flu vaccines this year are $30 for a regular flu vaccine. For high-dose vaccine, it's $45 for seniors who are 65 years of age and older. Flu mist is for $40 this year, and ages that's 2 to 50 years old. And then we have our pneumonia vaccines, which are $75. And this is all pretty consistent with what's going on around the community as far as the pricing of it. It's a few dollars less. And I suppose, you know, we could talk about next year if we should be more than a few dollars less. Yeah. Because, I mean, we ran out of $10 for it.
But you file that with Medicare?
What we haven't been set up for that, and... it's been a couple of reports back that I might have mentioned that we have applied for a grant so that we could start billing for insurances and Medicare. And we did get approved for the grant, and it's taking a lot of work to keep going. But we'll have that in place, not for this flu year, but it'll be for the next flu year. And I'll keep you updated on that. Right now, there's just a lot of steps to go through. I guess Dr. Passion's involved a little bit with that because he's our medical director, so we're having to get his word that he is a person worthy of having our medical director.
Yes. And then, yes, I will get that paperwork.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, of your clientele, it's convenient. They can go to any one of those pharmacies and they don't have to do anything.
That is correct, yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They don't get billed or anything. I mean,
from the pharmacy, you mean? They bill, don't they bill for insurances?
Walgreens and.
So you just pay cash, right?
No, I don't pay anything. They just.
You don't pay anything? You don't think they're sending that in?
Well, they send it into Medicare, but I mean, myself personally, it's a walk-in, walk-out situation.
That's where we hope that we'll be able to do something like that. That's our hope. We don't have that ability right now, but that is our hope with the system. That's slick.
Because with vaccines, you still have a free, for like children who come in for vaccines, it's still a free will.
That is correct.
Donation. So, but for flu vaccines, it's not. So you can say, so a family can come in and say, I want my MMR, my chickenpox vaccine. I'll give you $5 per vaccine, but I got to pay $40 for my flu mist. Yeah, interesting.
I'm not going to guess, but I can bring that to you next time. It hasn't been as high as it used to be. Like our services, it's not what it used to be because you can get flu vaccines everywhere anymore. We don't even go out and have clinics all over town anymore just because it's so accessible everywhere. But if somebody calls us and wants us to have a clinic at their organization, we'll do that. We try to be there and be available, but it costs us a lot more to set up clinics outside of the office and try to hit than it was kind of worth anymore because you can go to every pharmacy. And I think that we're doing a pretty good job here in Story County getting people vaccinated. So if we saw that that was dwindling, I think we would need to revisit that.
That's the other thing, too. There's not any real good data out there about flu vaccines because they're given in so many different places. And we've always tried to collect some information and about what our percentage of kids who get flu vaccinated. And the only thing we can say is the children who are under, like, McFarland Clinic and Department of Pediatrics, we can tell what percentage of them get flu vaccines. But we have no idea what percentage of flu vaccines are done in Story County, and which is kind of an interesting little problem. You know, and you guys have always had a different role because in many counties, the public health department gives the majority of vaccines. The majority, most, because they don't make money on vaccines in private practices. So what they end up doing is they end up just sending them to the public health department and to get most of their vaccines for kids in many, many other counties. And our county doesn't do that. Our county is, like, not the primary vaccine giver, but the supplemental vaccine giver.
That's okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I've always felt that it was a better way to get vaccines. But it's different. It's not that way in every county in Iowa. So we're a little different. Yeah.
I think it was Terry Ellinger said to me, you have 99 counties and all 99 do them differently.
Right.
Yeah. So, that's helpful. So I guess I'll move into the financial report. And this is the beginning of the fiscal year. So we just had the first quarter here. And just in general, I didn't see anything alarming here. We're starting to spend our grant dollars, and as every year, we don't believe we'll have any problem spending our money. So just this first quarter, I don't see anything that I really need to point out to you unless you have a particular question in there. I'll move into the preparedness capabilities. Very brief overview here. Again, over the last several times that I've come here, I've talked about developing a coalition for disaster health food. That is where Story County Public Health and the hospitals in Story County are coming together as a coalition where at this point in time we each get our own grant dollars that we are to use to prepare for any kind of emergency, healthcare kind of emergency. In preparation for what we believe, we mean the state as well, from things we hear from the national, is that in the future we probably won't have as many healthcare dollars available through grants for this sort of thing. So it's time that you develop coalitions and get prepared to try to get your monies elsewhere, essentially, through partners. What they wanted us to do initially, the state, was that we were to develop a coalition across boundaries so that, like, we were looking at Boone County and Marshall County and that sort of thing. Well, it was so unclear what we were supposed to do. Most of us decide what we would do instead is develop a coalition within our own county and first try to work with a hospital and a public health. So we have created a coalition, and you had to apply for this apply to the state to be a coalition. And I don't think I've told you, I haven't seen you since this occurred. We applied, we did our RFP for this to have this coalition, and I tell you, since Homeward has been Story County Public Health, we've never had anything denied, and we got denied this coalition after we put together bylaws and all this sort of thing. And the reason we got it denied is because there was a couple of areas that did not go, we didn't go into the detail they wanted on how we were going to spend our money in 4 and 5 years from now, because frankly, we thought it was silly to go into that detail. But anyway, so they are allowing us an extension. So our coalition does not exist yet. So we have an extension, which we have sent that in, and they will let us know by the end of October if we are able to be a coalition. I can't imagine where we won't be. And what that does, it allows us to continue to get dollars. So the very prescriptive, and I just wanted to review again, because this will become such a big part of what we're doing. There are 15 capabilities, and they have indicated that we will do X number of capabilities over the next 5 years. And so that means Story County Hospital, Mary Greeley Medical Center, and Story County Public Health, we all had to agree on which capabilities that we would do. And that's where the grant dollars will be focused on. Homeward, Story County Public Health is going to be the fiscal agent for these dollars. So in the future, Mary Greeley and Story County Medical Center and Public Health will not get separate grant dollars. We'll get them together. The most fascinating thing is that that public health is used to looking at the county and using our, we always got a large chunk of money, where the hospitals are used to looking within their walls. So when you put the monies together, it won't be just looking within my walls, it's how am I going to help the whole county, which is a whole different concept. So these capabilities, they support what's happening at the state and national level. And that's all I wanted to show you there. We start out with doing capability one, which we thought was the foundation. And with that, on these capabilities, the way they're set up, you have on the right the hospitals, what they are supposed to do, and what public health. So when we chose capability one, what they're pretty much saying is they're prescribing what the things that we have to do. This kind of breaks it down a little better. So like public health, we're focusing on building community partnerships. And we're going to have to prove over this first year how we're doing that, how we're engaging the community, how we're coordinating and things within the community. For the hospitals, you'll see they're still focusing on planning within their healthcare system. So I just wanted to point out that these were two different kind of focuses, but yet somehow they work together. Special needs populations, how we will prepare for that. The other one that we chose was Capability 15, and that one is to continue to build our infrastructure for volunteers. And right now, we're so fortunate to use RSVP, and they are just really engaged and helping us to get our volunteer system. I won't go into the details of this, but again, just to be aware, this is what we'll be spending our time on. And when we do finally get approved to be a coalition and we get our dollars sent to us, what we'll need to do is in our bylaws have two meetings within a year that's open to the public so that our stakeholders and our partners can come to these meetings and advise us on how best to use our monies for these capabilities. So ISU, fire, those sorts of things. And we've heard that even though why our coalitions are mostly within our own counties, that probably next spring they'll be talking about we need to start partnering again and being a coalition with other counties. So when that time comes, we'll let you know. Yeah, it's kind of a difficult time, actually. That's all I have. Just wanted to keep you up on any questions that I could possibly answer.
Look like it.
I'm wondering if it looks darker because of the government shutdown.
Our Freedom Flight had to get a congressional security guard to take them into the World War II monument. They flew out today, flew out this morning.
Yeah.
And of course, everything shut down.
Oh.
So yeah, there are several veterans groups that are out there, and apparently the group from Virginia actually stormed the monument.
Oh my.
Okay. Moving on. Thanks, Eileen.
Yes.
We're going to add YSF for their report. They were inadvertently left off our agenda, and I see they're here today, so we're going to go ahead and hear the report from YSF. Denise Denton. I'm assuming Denise brought the paper for everybody.
I brought the paper.
You're gonna do that. You're gonna do that every time, or just today? Okay.
And it's not dissimilar to what we've done before, but a couple things that I want to bring to your attention, sort of left over from that one and coming into the new one. In the last grant, we promised that we would try and get as many pharmacies on board with take-back programs as we possibly could, and we did that. We
There we go.
Who is the corporate pharmacies? I don't understand.
But Target and Walmart and Kmart.
But not Hy-Vee.
Hy-Vee does have a take-back program. Yeah, so big corporate. So we're pleased about that, and we're in the process of putting together a certificate that we can take to those pharmacies to thank them for their participation in that. So we'll try to be doing that all through October as part of Prevention Month. I'm putting those in the paper. The other side of that is we want to continue focusing on pharmaceuticals. So Linda Kalin, who is the director of the Iowa Poison Control Center and who is an expert all over the state to the pharmacy schools, is going to be coming to Iowa State as part of a lecture series in partnership with the Story County Prevention Policy Board on November 19th at 7 o'clock. And the name of her talk is Pharmageddon. And she's done that at the Governor's Conference several times. And it's a really excellent presentation on how prescription drugs are abused and some of the things that you can do about that. So just sort of a heads up on that. The thing that we really want to spend our time doing today is the thing we've been threatening you with for months now, which is the ordinance on the proposed ordinance on a ban on nicotine products in Story County. And with me is Randy Peters.
Or, is there something I can do for you?
Yes, sir. I'm going to register a protest. They weren't on the agenda, whether it was inadvertent or not. They are an agency that brings a regular report to you. Should be noticed on the agenda, and now she's introducing potential legislation without any notice to the public. Thank you. So obviously, I'm protesting it.
Go ahead, Denise.
So this is the ordinance that we've discussed in the past that the Story County Prevention Policy Board would like to introduce to you in the hopes that you will partner with them to actually introduce it to the Board of Supervisors. And I am a staff person, so I will not be doing that. I'm just introducing, but Randy Peters and Brian Vanderhagen, who are members of the Story County Prevention Policy Board, will do that.
And just so we're clear, because you weren't added to the agenda today, we won't be. This board won't be able to take any action. We can simply hear your report,
yes.
But we won't be able to take any action or anything.
All right.
Okay. I'm Randy Peters. Due to the increase in the number of available nicotine-based products, we're concerned about what's going on with the minors in this county. Right now, there is no age restriction on e-cigarettes, or Zonic, or nicotine gum, some of the stuff that's out there, and we're concerned. They're not tobacco, but have a higher nicotine content than the usual tobacco products. Currently, certain these are not regulated and can be bought and sold anywhere. And we propose that these be regulated by county ordinance and sold in the same way that tobacco products are, behind the counter, so you'd have to, you know, require an ID if it's a minor requesting it. These have a potential to reduce the number of youth that have access to the product if we do put some regulations in on this. And, you know, the ads become more alluring, and such things as flavored e-cigarettes, you can change the disc in them to give it a different flavor. Lots of variations on that. So we are proposing to have an ordinance to develop the help of Story County Attorney. Well, this ordinance was developed with the help of Steve Holmes, the Story County Attorney. And we've actually modeled this after Linn County had first proposed and passed this.
And this is information that we've had before.
Right. I'm on the Story County Prevention Policy Board.
Sure. And the Board of Supervisors has also got a representative on that board.
Yep. And it just happens to be timely that this came out today.
So I would simply ask that you contact Kristen Cook in Environmental Health and get yourself put on the agenda for the December meeting if you want to bring that ordinance forward for this board.
Okay. Thank you.
Do we have to have two readings before we vote on it, or what's the rule?
Probably three.
Three?
Yeah. So.
For the public, though.
Right.
Okay.
Environmental Health, Margaret James. And Margaret promised that she would change up the presentation.
Well, the first part, not so much, so sorry.
It does say Board of Health. Oh, no, it says Board of Supervisors.
Yeah. Oh, does it?
Yes. I'm going to change it myself.
Yeah, that's right. Am I being graded on this? Or? Okay. we'll start with septic systems, our favorite topic. 60, from the start of the year, 60 new septic systems went in, 60 chymo transfer inspections, 40 new septic systems went in, 13 repairs at box or tank, 6 binding agreements, outstanding, some of them a little bit overdue, but a lot of the contractors are so busy they can't quite make those deadlines. Outstanding NRDs, 7. An issue that's come up, there's been a few where there's two properties using one septic system. Not a good idea. I found out just this past couple weeks the one guy wants to add a bedroom, and as it stands, the system would take that on, but then the next guy couldn't ever add on. You know, if he wanted to add on to his house, he would then have to expand on the septic system. So I said before they go any further, they should really get a written agreement between the two and figure things out before expenses come up on these systems. So not a good idea. In most cases, it is a good idea in the septic systems, subdivisions that have tiny little lots. It's really good to have them on package plants like South Squaw Valley. So that they can eventually just hook onto the big pipe if that ever comes to pass.
So how does this one in particular work? So somebody was already there with a septic system, and then somebody built a house and said, hey, can we hook onto your...
No, you know what happened is one owner had the whole thing, and then they split it out.
Okay.
And then after the split, then the new guy wanted to add a bedroom, and that impacts the size of the septic system. Okay, well numbers, permits so far 45, 11 of which are for water. Well plugging 19, water tests 72, and time of transfer well inspections 29. Kathy and Matt are going to be working on policy and procedure on time of transfer well inspections, because there's so many different scenarios. We just want to make sure we're doing it fair across the board and consistently across the board. The well in Franklin Township that Kathy's been working on, that has coliform counts around 200. We shoot for zero. So there, it's been a real pickle of a well. So we've been spending a lot of time with those folks. Our lead inspection program, we have 8 environmental cases that are still open. One with a child children residing. Paul recommended this morning that I meet with legal to try to possibly consider legal action on that one family to get them to encourage them to get rid of the lead hazards at this time. And I did one follow-up recently. Pool tattoo and tanning. The staff visited all but one tattoo facility. Letters will be going out to the tanning facilities to let them know that they are on our radar. Pool activity has diminished since Labor Day pool closings, outdoor pool closings. And then later this winter, we plan to meet with Keith of the Ames Park and Rec to go over their pool facilities, learn how their pumps and their water treatment work, things like that, get it all figured out before Labor Day so we know what we're doing come then.
You mentioned that you visited the tattoo facility. Did you just go in and introduce yourself, or did you inspect?
Well, the reason why we did all of them is they've been inspected for the last fiscal year, but the state had reason for concern that there was a chain of tattoo parlors where they were doing things that were not acceptable, and not our specific one, but someone in that chain. And so they asked us to look into that. So we thought, in fairness, we would just go and talk to all of them, so that we're not singling any one place out. Okay. So we didn't inspect it at that time. No, mm-hmm. We introduced ourselves with eyes wide open. You know, just kind of looking for problems.
How many tattoo parlors are there?
6. We don't have many. They're all in Ames. Yep.
You didn't see my daughter in any of them, did you?
which daughter, Paul?
We'll want to report.
I've had that discussion.
Too young. Cryptosporidium kept us hopping for a little while this summer. We had 12 cases reported within Story County. The information that we were given were usually very vague on when they were swimming or the symptom start date, so that made it really hard to decide if the pool should be shut down or not. All crypto cases were outdoor pools with the exception of one, and that was in Ames. Homeward tends to get us the information quicker than Iowa Department of Public Health does, so that's telling me that IDPH can definitely do a better job getting us that information, because that's the easy part, you know, passing that information on. And we do plan to meet with IDPH along with other counties to discuss what we can do better with the crypto problem if it continues next summer. IDPH reports that there have been 1,015 cases of crypto so far this year, compared to 328 last year. And the numbers have dropped considerably with the outdoor pools closing, but they're still high compared to last year, this same time of the year. And as we know, let's see, crypto is highly contagious and very resistant to chlorine. So the pools that we investigated, they all had the proper chlorine levels. They were just fine, but crypto was resistant, and so that didn't affect, you know, they were still able to live in a chlorine pool.
What do they do? What do they do to...
Well, there's a certain number of hours. You have to take it up really high, the chlorine levels really high, and have them sit. There's a formula. If you have it X high, then it has to be X number of hours.
Higher, okay.
Way higher. You have to close the pool down because it's too high for swimmers.
Right.
Complaints we received: bed bugs in an apartment complex in Ames, brand new apartment, mold in Nevada, mold in Ames, and the recurring Crestview complaints. for training for the three of us.
What were the Crestview complaints?
This time I believe it was sewage on the ground again, and I think water issues, not sufficient pressure, water pressure. It's always water and or sewer. DNR gets involved, we get involved, and they get written up by DNR, and they kind of fix it, and then the problem just comes right back.
So what's DNR saying? Shut them down, or what are they going to do to remedy this?
They don't shut them down. They just make them, like, shock a well or line the sewage on the ground and make sure it's not happening, hook up a trailer, you know, just different things.
But doesn't this keep happening all the time?
Yes, it does.
So how many more times do they let this just keep happening?
Well, I know. And I've asked, just sort of as an aside, when I ran into one of the city managers, I asked what the possibility was for getting Crestview hooked onto City of Ames, and they said not a good possibility.
Well, it's pretty close.
It's really close. And actually, I think they're starting to move to the north and right up abutted to the trailer park. So I think if they request annexation, I'm not sure if Ames can say no or not.
Well, they have to be annexed. They have to be annexed in, but...
Right, but I mean, if they ask to be voluntarily annexed, I don't think City of Ames can necessarily say no, can they? Because they're surrounded now on two sides with City of Ames.
Well, if they annex in, then they can hook up to the city sewer without a problem.
Right.
But at what point will they make them do it? Huh?
Ames doesn't want them.
Right, but that's not an option if they want to. If they want to get annexed in, and they're willing to pay the line cost to get it from where it's at to them, or if the DNR says, hey, it's close enough, you need to hook up, I don't think the City of Ames would have a choice, would they?
I don't know. They seem to think they do have a choice. So, you know, with that annexation comes police protection and, you know, all the other things that, and, you know, being part of the city.
So how does it work with, isn't there some sort of a ruling or guideline about if you're within so many feet, isn't it a couple hundred feet of a...
It's 200 feet if you're within a line, you have to hook up. But that's a direction to the property owner, but it's not required of the city. You can't make a city do it.
Okay.
Okay.
You can make the property owner.
So the regulation is over... being the property owner, not the city.
And I think if you can be surrounded on two sides, you just can't be made. They can't make Crestview an island.
Yeah.
So they could actually annex on three sides of them.
Is that right? Yeah. Okay.
I think that's right.
I thought it was an 80-20 rule, but okay.
But you can make it a peninsula.
You can make it a peninsula, but you can't.
How about an isthmus?
That actually is that. Now you're just talking crazy.
That's what I thought. Okay, so we all went to the EOC training, all four of us, Kristen and Matt and Kathy and I. And then I went to the NEHA conference. And like I told Paul earlier, my picture was in the NEHA magazine. I was standing there. I think I was in line to get a donut or something probably. But,
and NEHA stands for?
National Environmental Health Association. Yeehaw. And Kathy did the well workshop, and Matt did the ESRI conference in San Diego. Animal feeding operations, you're kind of out of the loop on this, but we did the master matrix for Lincoln Feeders about 3 miles north of Zering. And they passed. It took two public meetings to get through that whole thing because we needed clarification from DNR. But they did pass. It's about 7,000 head of hogs, finishing hogs, big operation. They got the go-ahead. They're going to be building that soon. We received 21 manure management plan updates this year. And then Rick Sanders, the Board of Supervisors, Jessica, and I attended a meeting with DNR Field Office 5 to discuss the county's role. We pretty much knew the answers, but we needed it confirmed for these meetings, these public meetings that we've been having for these CAFOs.
And then I also received an email from DNR recognizing the county's thoroughness, not complimenting, just recognizing, and offered an example of another county's method of a checkbox saying, yes, it passes, no, it doesn't pass, and here's why. And I'm not going to do it that way. I think that these public comments and all these things that comes up in the public hearings, DNR needs to know that about permitting these animal confinements, and they're not going to get a checkbox from me. I'm not going to do it that route. Zoning application review policy. Now, this is a policy I'm proposing. Stay with me here. I know policy gets kind of dry. But right now, when planning and zoning get applications in, we take a look at them. And if they're adding a bedroom, then we'll require the septic system to be the right size, okay, because septic systems are sized based on bedrooms and soil. Another thing we look at is whether or not their addition is going to go right where the septic system is, because they can't put it over top of that. Unless it's a bedroom added, we really don't do anything, just check to make sure they're not going to be building on top of it. My proposal is that we do a review of all or most of the zoning applications. So, for example, if planning gets an application in for a new garage or a deck or something like that, we would take that application and look at it and look through our files. And if we don't have something that shows that, yes, indeed, they have a septic system, it will be their job to prove that they have a septic system. There's possibly 100 additional applications per year that we would have to review, give or take. And then maybe, 25% Matt, would you want to say, that would require a full septic system? Maybe not that high, maybe 15%. And it's all pre-1972 housing for the most part, because those are the folks that don't have septic systems that were permitted. So you can see that this could be a big can of worms. So if somebody comes in and wants to just add a deck on, all of a sudden they are on the hook for a deck and a septic system. So the cost of that is a lot more. So I need your input on that, for starters. And then if you want me to go forward with that, then we'll have to have a public hearing, because this definitely affects property owners in Story County.
If you put a deck on, then you want to make sure they're not putting that over the top.
Well, we already do that. We already get the application, and then we pull the file that we have, and say it was built in 78. We've got a diagram, and we just tell them, you can put it there because you're not disrupting the septic system. That's fine. And so in the new policy, that would be the exact same answer for that one, because they have something on file. But if they didn't have anything, and we suspect that it's going to the ditch, that at that point we would like to be able to say, prove to us that you have a septic system. And the way they would prove it is similar to a time of transfer inspection, where they pump the tank and expose the box, and that pretty much tells us what they have.
In other words, anytime anybody comes in from the unincorporated area that wants to do something that requires a zoning permit, that would trigger your office to inquire whether or not they've got a system or not.
Correct.
And would be anything that somebody's going to put up a building that's separate from the house, and they just want the building permit to put up a pole barn. This would trigger your department to check.
Review their file, and if they don't have any paper in our file, then they have to prove it by pumping. Mm-hmm. There would be some exceptions that we could consider, like if they wanted to come in and put a fence in or a sign in, things like that. You know, maybe look the other way on those, you know, something like that. Or not. I mean, we could do everybody.
If they put on a little deck on their house in the back, does that require a permit?
It does.
It does. Sorry.
Yeah, from planning. Mm-hmm.
I don't know. That's interesting. What's anybody else think?
Or do you want to think on it and get back to me next meeting, or if there's more information I could get for you?
What you're proposing is that if there's any type of construction that requires a permit, that you have to get your septic system inspected or make sure that it had been inspected, correct?
Yes, pretty much.
So that's very similar to what happens in the city of Ames, and tell me if I'm wrong on this, but if you have any type of addition onto your house, you have to bury the electricity, right? So it's a similar type thing. Even if you're not doing any big electrical work, you have to, if you've gotten something that requires a permit on your house, because they want all the electrical lines buried.
Okay.
I don't think you'd have, no. As long as that is not interfering with electrical, I don't think you'd have to. If it's overhead, you can put a deck on or something and not have to.
Okay.
I think you can leave it overhead.
Okay. But if it requires any type of...
Yeah, if that deck's in the way of that overhead, then they would have to change it. Then I think they'd make you go underground. Because if the overhead's coming overhead and then coming down the house, right where they want to add the deck on, then you'd have to change it. But if they moved the deck over so it wasn't interfering, then I think you can leave it just like it is.
We couldn't, and our overhead was going in a different side of the house. But because it was a major addition, they at least told us, maybe it's wrong, that we had to bury it. And because they were putting in new electricity and...
Oh, well, probably because you were putting more panel in and stuff,
right,
yeah.
Right. So that would make sense.
Yeah, that would make sense.
But that's what you're proposing. So it would certainly be a way for you to look at all the septic systems, or have a better chance of looking at all the septic systems and making sure they're safe.
That's right. And are there, yeah. And it kind of evens up the floor or circumvents the time of transfer, where a lot of these old farmhouses are not getting inspected at the time of transfer because they're in an estate or consanguinity, things like that. So those have been, just fell out of our reach totally for inspection.
I'd be involved with this are obviously contractors, because if you put on your own deck, you don't need a permit, you're supposed to get one, but you really don't need one. But if they get a contractor in, they have to get a permit. Really?
Yeah.
Everybody gets that?
Oh no.
So
it is required.
Right. So, but the people who will be affected by this are the contractors, because they will have to.
Well,
I know everyone is supposed to.
Yeah, I mean the homeowner has to get the permit, and theoretically a contractor would say, sure, I'll do it, but you need to get the permit, and I'm going to have to take a look at that before I'm going to start. And then it's going to be up to the homeowner, if they come in to put on an addition or a deck and come to find out, lo and behold, they don't have a septic system, then it's on the land, the property owner.
Yeah.
But then there's nothing to stop them from withdrawing the permit.
Right. But then they would receive a notice of violation from us if we knew that they didn't have a system and they never bothered to put one in. And we would give them, like a year.
So, take me for instance. My house is 19 years old. I want to put another addition on. I don't know why I'd ever want to do that. But so I come to get the permit. So what would I have to do to satisfy environmental health before I could...
We would pull the file. We would see that, yes, indeed, you have a permit and a diagram, and you're good to go. That's
okay.
All we would require of that one. If your house was built in 1970, did not have a permit or a diagram, then we would ask you to basically do a time of transfer type of inspection and prove to us that you do have something.
And do you have like a ballpark? What would that cost somebody to?
Around $400.
About $400. Okay. You know what other counties do? Is this?
No, I don't think they do this.
Anybody else?
No, I don't know.
Have there historically been problems with older houses? Is that why this is being proposed? I guess you have had a lot of issues that haven't come up, or?
Well, there have been those issues, and in the past we've always been told, no, you can't touch it. And then for some reason now they're saying legal has advised that, yes, we can do this. And so there are a lot of them, farmhouses that you know they're just hooked to a tile or to a ditch or to a creek. But we can't do anything until they sell. And then oftentimes when they sell, they still don't have to do anything because of all these restrictions on the time of transfer inspection. So I wouldn't say a huge problem, but several come in that don't have anything on the books for septic, nothing. I mean, is it being too aggressive? I don't know. I mean,
it makes sense to me. It'd be nice to know. I mean, really, it's like you were talking about putting sewage into the ground.
Yes. Right. Mm-hmm.
Nice to know. And I think it would be important to know from an environmental standpoint. I'd be really interested to hear what contractors would think about this. It would be just interesting to poll some of them and see whether that would be something that they would be diametrically opposed. I don't know if I'd do anything differently with their opinion, but it'd be kind of nice to hear what the other side would have to say, because
you're not talking about septic contractors, you're talking about health condition contractors. Yeah. And they would be tempted to maybe skip the permitting process and undermine some of planning's efforts.
I think that's my biggest concern. I mean, if I come in to get a permit to put a deck on my house, and I know that I don't have a septic system, and you tell me that I'm going to have to prove to you that I do before I can, I'm going to say, okay, fine, forget it, and I'm going to go get my brother-in-law, and we're going to put a deck on the back of my house.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Or we're going to put an addition on my house, and I'm not an unpermitted addition on the back of my house that nobody's going to inspect. I mean, obviously, when the assessor comes to pay me a visit at some point, they're going to see that, well, you've got X amount more square feet than you did the last time we were here. Now you've got an unpermitted addition.
Yeah. So
initially, you know, I'm of the opinion that it might be a little too aggressive. I mean, I would hate to think that, you know, like I said, people are going to avoid the permitting process knowing that this is what they're going to be in for. People that have a working septic system, it's not going to bother them any.
I'm sorry to interrupt. Is it correct to say it's also to protect the homeowner to make sure that their septic system is sized properly? If they're adding, say, a bedroom and their usage increases, they could possibly have issues with their septic, so it's also to protect them?
And it certainly would do that, protect them from sewage backing into their house. Yeah.
Protection for them as well. It's not just, so, hey, we got you.
Right, but you're still talking, you know, and even if I do have a house that was built, you know, in 1950 and I put a septic system in since I bought it, I'm still going to have to shell out the $400 to prove to the county that, yeah, I do have a system in place. Right.
You wouldn't have to do that.
And then if somebody goes out to the
Yeah, and that mechanism is in place for unpermitted structures or additions. So,
it's a real good question. My family lives in a county which will not be named. And they had, when they moved into their old farmhouse, it was basically just kind of pouring into the stream.
Sure.
And they were, like, disgusted with it, so they got a septic system put in. But we know that a bunch of people on that stream don't.
Very county is still not beyond that, yeah.
Interesting. I'd like some thoughts. I would really like to find out what the other side says, the people who would have to be dealing with construction, just even if it's very informal. And it might be that you would talk to some people and they say, listen, we do enough with permits. There's always things that they have to update when they do permits. This is going to be a little thing. It would be interesting to hear them say you know.
Okay, I can get some. Okay.
Yeah, I think give us some time to mull it over, and then we can put it back on for December.
Let me know if there's any other information. I'll get that lined up for you, and
then
you can see something.
If these joint wells or septic systems, if they had an agreement, where would they file it? Would they file it with you?
That we try to collect agreements like that. They could also put it with the recorder, but then, and we just learned this recently, just like with easements, if it goes with a piece of property and then it sells again and again, that easement is buried, so it doesn't, it's still on the records, but it's really hard to find because it's several layers down. Am I explaining this right? Yeah. So you can go up to the recorder's office if you've got a half a day and, you know, go through their records, you know, so it's very difficult. So, yes, from now on, now that we know that, we will try to get that information. We would be glad to keep it on record for folks if they want that, but a lot of people don't have that. It's just kind of a handshake.
That's the point that, you know, I think we ought to decide where that ought to go. I got an agreement, and I think it's with the recorder's office. I share a well with a neighbor, and that was written in the contract when we bought the property.
Well, yours would be a good test case. We could try to find it, see how long it takes us, and yeah, we'll do that. It'd be fun. Yeah. Property changes hands multiple times. You don't remember who it was with originally. And even if you do remember, if it's a Smith, that's really for a toot or a... Yeah. So, but yeah, we'll give yours a try and just see if it's doable.
To have much or many unpermitted septic systems put in?
I was afraid you were going to ask that. I'm going to get some numbers for you that'll give us an idea of how many we've permitted versus how many, and I have that information buried somewhere in my stuff, versus number of rural properties.
Theoretically, anybody that puts a system in Story County has to have been through FIAP.
Oh, well, no, 2015.
2015.
Right. Yep. Files, yep. Yep. Okay, that's all I have.
Questions for Margaret? Okay.
Additional items, discussion of septic system review and inspection policy.
Oh,
no, that was it.
I did that.
We kind of blend, oh, okay. That's all right. Discussion of environmental health salaries. I was requested by Dr. Passion to add this to the agenda for today's meeting. So I'll let Dr. Passion.
Well, the thing is, you know, this has come up on other meetings about discussion about salaries and compared to the zoning and planning. Correct. And tell me if I'm not right. But we still get a sense that you're not really satisfied with what's kind of been put out. So I just basically wanted us to have kind of an upfront discussion and throwing out numbers and, you know, and to do this publicly. I mean, I don't like to talk about, you know, salaries very much. But I think that it's important to do and know exactly is it, I mean, how much money are we talking about here? I mean, I just really want to know some basics. Are we talking about that you're only getting paid $40,000 a year and everyone else doing your job is getting paid $70,000 a year? I want to know what kind of degree you're talking about. So that's kind of why, that's why I would like to kind of see it put out. And, you know, and we work with you, and we don't work with the Zoning and Planning Commission, or committee, you know. And we see what you do, but we don't necessarily see what they do. And so, here you go. That at least is my thought.
Okay. And I was not here at last meeting, and Kathy and Matt did a great job uncovering for me. So I did listen to the tape, and so I gleaned from there things that seemed like they hadn't been resolved. And this is my list of
of things. So comparison with other counties, and then the term technical versus professional in our in their job description, planning and development versus environmental health requirements. So that's whether or not you can replace a bachelor's degree with X number of years experience. 3% for non-elected directors. EH specialist job description, and in part that would include the technical versus professional. And then I threw this one in, temporary employee that we have at the time, he's been at the same rate for 4 years. So on the educational requirements, I went to the job descriptions for a planner and an environmental health person, and there is no difference. And in the last meeting, it was said that it boils down to you make less, environmental health makes less because we have lesser requirements. That is not a fact. It's exactly the same.
So that's out. Okay. Yeah. Got it.
So on to the next thing, professional versus technical. I just, you know, Johnson County, Linn County, they use the word professional when they're just in their job description. Several other do, others do. You know, it's an opinion. Most folks refer to this as professional or neither. They don't say it's professional or technical. They don't use either term in the job description. Or if they do, they use the word professional.
So, and the issue with that is, and again, I'm really just trying to understand this. If it's considered technical, you'll get paid less. And if it's considered professional, you'll get paid more.
That is what we've been told.
That came from Springstead. I think that came from
Springstead.
Yeah, that was the explanation I was given from Springstead. It depends on how the job description grades out.
Okay.
On to the next, comparison from other counties. It's a little tough to see. So here's some counties, and yes, we handpicked ones that are about the same as us or favorable. There are some that we couldn't compare to because, say, like Polk County, for example, they're all under public works, and it's all a mixed bag. But these are pretty similar to us. County size differs. However, the ones with the higher population, they have cities that had their own health departments, so that city population should actually be subtracted out of that total county population. So those are some comparisons.
Tell me, is that their base salary, or is that their salaries with all the benefits?
That's their hourly rate. Yeah, that's base, but that doesn't include perks.
Okay, so it'd be your base, that'd be the same. Okay.
I think it's apples and apples there.
So in Story County, there is a population of 90,000, but the Ames has a population of 50,000, which you don't.
No, that's all included.
Total
county population.
But and in Ames, well, you're the public health for Ames too.
Ames, except they don't have septic.
They don't have septic systems, but now you're doing the pools and.
True. Yeah, so it's really hard to compare counties. It really is. But I know that has been an argument before that some counties have a lot higher population, but then they also have their own Board of Health and their own people that do that. So like Polk County and Dallas County, for example. I know Dallas County, he's looking for work lots of times because so much of the city is, or so much of their county is sewers, so they, you know,
Okay.
If we're comparing this with your base salary, then we are looking at that far right column. Is that correct?
Kind of the. Okay, my level would be the
far right.
Yeah. And EH would be the two, middle.
And that's
bottom and the max.
What she has shown there is the range from the low to the high.
So like Story County is 52 to 79.
Right.
The other ones are, they start off similar, but they change a little bit on the high end.
Okay, so you're getting paid 79.4. No.
That's the,
the top of our, my range. I'm, paid, I'm getting paid 57.
Got it. Okay.
I started at 55, and then I got, I've been here 20 years, so I've, my longevity has bumped me up. And what else? We did get a cost of living in January. We got a 2%? Yeah. So that's why it's higher than the base.
I've got it.
Okay, I forget what they make.
$42,600
And you have to look at that very top number.
Right, that's what I'm looking
don't,
at.
Because we're not that flex benefit that that is. We're not to include that as salary.
No, I'm looking at the top, the base salary, which is those numbers are base.
Because that is kind of deceiving the way that
right. That's why I asked if that was our base salaries, if those included the benefits.
I think Matt is at 42,600
Yeah.
And I think Kathy is at 44,500
You've been here 9 And Margaret's 20 How long have you been here, Matt? 3, 4, 3 What was that? I think you brought up either the last meeting or the meeting before. What was that bonus thing about? What was that?
That
county has a policy that non-elected department heads are eligible for up to a any employee is up to a 3% bonus.
3%, okay.
And
hold it into your pay, or is it just a bonus, a one-time
bonus?
One-time bonus.
It can go either way. It can either be added to your base, or it can be a one-time bonus. When you were acting as a director before you'd actually been named director, in the discrepancy in pay, you were given a 3% one-time payment to cover the supposedly cover the time you were acting as director and weren't being paid as director. Is that correct? Right. We did that shortly after I started on the board. I think that was one of the first thing that we ever did when I was on this board.
I can't remember what it was, but I know that I had to bring it to the board's attention because I thought I was being treated unfairly. And
right.
They sent a lawyer down to talk to me, and I was being treated unfairly.
So county employees or any county employees eligible for an up to a 3% bonus, and we did give some of our department heads bonuses 2 or 3 months ago, before the 1st of July. So it took effect with their pay raises that went into effect July 1st.
That was for all department heads?
Not all department heads.
But the non-elected?
Not all of them. The planning and development director, the animal shelter director, community services program.
I was curious why I was excluded from that.
My rationale was that you'd been named director shortly after, or shortly before I was elected to this board. So you had been, if I'm not mistaken, because I can remember when I was campaigning, coming to the Board of Supervisors, that was part of the discussion between you and the Board of Supervisors, is when they were going to make a decision on who they were going to hire as a director. So when were you officially named the director?
Let's see. Officially, May 4th, 2010.
2010.
So I've been in this position for more than 3 years, and then interim director for a year. So it's been 4 years of this position, and I was really offended that other department heads would get that, and I was just totally skipped. I was very offended.
And I can appreciate your
4 years is enough time to sort of demonstrate this.
The other directors that were given the bonuses had been directors longer than you had, and it was my theory that you hadn't been in that position long enough to warrant the 3% increase.
At last meeting, I recall that you said 2 years. This is 4 years.
Well, if you were named director in May of 2010, and the raises went into effect in July, so that roughly for just over 3 years. May 2010 to July of 2013 is just over 3 years.
But then also the interim, I count that as part of my tenure as this.
And
as
my thought on that is that you were compensated for that with the 3% one-time payment.
Oh, wow. Are you kidding?
No, Margaret, I'm not. I came to this board and was the one that was suggested that you were given that payment when it was brought to my attention that you weren't given anything.
Because I was being paid as an environmental specialist and then 3% onto that. I mean, I was not being paid as
exactly, and that's why you were given the 3% one-time payment.
Okay, if you thought that was fair.
What was the criteria for this last time, this last...
It was... special project they've been given, the type of work that they've done. The animal control director's been here many years. She does an outstanding job in her department. The same with Leanne Harder, the planning and development director. Leanne Harder has been given, I couldn't begin to tell you the number of projects that she's been given by this board since I've been on it. She oversaw the government restructuring committee when they were in force. She's overseen the strategic planning that the county's done. She's been overseeing the community improvement or capital improvement program that the county's started. So it was our opinion that Leanne had taken on quite a bit more than what she had in the past. Such as? Then you need to come over to the mic.
Are you talking about Leanne and animal control, or are we talking about
planning and development?
Okay, got it.
I mean, sitting in the same department as planning and development, because we do share the same spot now. Just from overhearing what goes on, she has handed off. She has done this where they have these areas that each planner is responsible for. The county is split up into three. She has the middle part, and the two other planners have the other part. She has handed off her duties from those to those other two planners because she is too busy with these other projects. So, you know, if you're giving her a 3% bonus increase, whatever it is, due to her being a director, then shouldn't she be doing those responsibilities?
You know,
I think we're way off course.
And
we're not going to sit here and discuss another director's.
And I understand that.
We're here today.
But what I'm trying to help justify this here.
And I guess that's what I was going to try to say. I think talking about someone else's salary is not appropriate.
And I understand that. But I'm just trying to...
My frustration with all this is that is where all this began. The first statement that was made was, if you compare us to what the planners make, and that's how this all started, is you wanted to compare yourself...
We were told by HR that the reason that we were a grade below, you know, anything else was because there was a difference in the professional and technical.
Well, I'll ask you this question, Matt. Do you think that you're underpaid for what you're doing?
If you look at other counties, yes.
Do you think you're under, for what you're doing here in Story County, do you think that you're underpaid for what you're doing?
Yes, we should be higher in... I can agree with the pay grade, but it should be higher within that pay grade. We should not be clear down there at the bottom part. We shouldn't be more towards the middle. There's almost a $20,000 difference in that pay grade from top to bottom.
Well, absolutely. And I'm not going to disagree with that. And I can tell you right now that very few, if any, of our department managers or department heads are even at the midway point in that pay scale.
Mm-hmm. And I understand that. But you look at Lane County, who their pay grade is closer together. There's only a $10,000 difference there. You know, they start out higher. Yeah, their population's higher, but again, you know, you have Cedar Rapids, but their rural area is very small. And then the same with Johnson County, you know, their pay grade is 15,000 difference, and basically the same, their base is the same, or bottom is the same. And I can understand that.
Well,
I gave you a couple months ago, or a couple meetings ago, the breakdown by programs, what each county does, and if you average it out, we are way underpaid for the amount of programs that we do.
The one thing I do know is that ever since I've been on this Board of Health, when we used to sit and listen to, you know, Don Nolting do this, the previous predecessor, that this, our, you know, the our environmental specialists have taken on more and more and more. You know, and it's just like they're, you know, now they're expanding into Ames and things like that. So, and this has happened a fair amount, I've noticed, over the past 2 or 3 years, you know, that more things are being taken on with other counties and stuff. And I don't know. I think it might be, I'm trying to look at these numbers. First of all, I agree that you're just not a technical, you know, organization. I don't think that's the case, at least from what I understand. It would be, I would personally have no objections. I don't know how everyone else feels, but I would have no objections if the professional, it'd be technical and professional put in. I think you do both. I think you do some technical things, and I think that would make sense. And I think, you know, when these people that came in, they came in, what, 3 years ago, 2 years?
For the...
the salary thing?
Springstead.
Springstead came in 2011. The final report was given to us in July last year.
Yeah, we
accepted the report a year ago.
Yeah, but since that time, more things have been accepted from them.
Well, the only additional, really, is the tattoo inspections. And the
I do so much more than I did 3 years ago when I started. Every day, there's something with MMPs that I didn't have 2 years ago. Septic pumper inspections. There is so much more I do every day. I started at the beginning of September keeping a daily log of everything I do. And
part of that is my doing. I have been taking on more programs and challenging Kathy in that, and they always rise to the occasion. You know, I mean, we could take the easy, lazy route and just go status quo, but we're not. We're going after these programs, and for the pool tattoo tanning, for example, I think it's excellent that we have, because hearing the complaints that we've gotten on previous inspectors, I think it's a very good move on Story County's part that we have these programs now.
And it is something that brings in money. That, the septic pumper inspections, that brings in money. We're not taking on things that we're doing free. You know, it is stuff that brings in money, and we're not absolutely swamping ourselves. We are taking on our responsibility, and we're doing it in phases. We didn't take on septic pumper inspections and the tattoo pool and tanning all at the same time. Took on one. Yep, we can handle that. We can handle more. Took on the pools, and you know, we're making the same and doing four times the amount of work.
Yeah, your report is much more interesting than it was.
So as a board, when was the last time that we acted on salaries? Do you recall?
I'm sorry, I cannot remember.
It's been at least 3 years, I think, hasn't it?
Well, it was not for me. It's when you and Dr. Kluge.
Right.
That was 3 years.
That was the last time we did anything with salaries, other than what the Board of Supervisors has done some adjustments, right?
Right. Typically the last 3 years it's been a 2% increase. for all counties?
I think my first year was like a 1.5, I think.
First year I was on the board would have been 2011. It was $1,000 across the board for everybody. 2012 was a 2%, and 2013 was a 2%.
Yeah, you're right. It was $1,000.
2% this year.
Just last July.
And no one wants you to think that, you know, we're trying to insult by any means. And we know that this is a salary has a lot more to do with it than just the money that you're taking home. It has more to do with how you're perceived as, you know, as and you're good to the community. So I can understand the emotions about this, but that's part of the reasons for this discussion. It seems like there was a lot of stuff underneath. So do we relook at this? Is there an ability to relook at this? We don't pay people. We don't make the final decision.
No, there's I would assume that this will need to be brought before the Board of Supervisors to see if there's interest in, and I don't know, I mean, we had the salary survey done, and I don't know if you think we need to have somebody else do it, if you're not happy with what Springstead came up with. I told you before, I don't believe that they just pulled these numbers out of a hat. They were made with comparison.
But if you look at their numbers on that chart that they had for the wages, they did not have any responses. They had responses for the director, but they did not have responses for environmental health specialist.
Would it solve the issue if we changed your job description to include professional?
And then give it back to Springstead and have them re-evaluate?
Would that? I mean...
I'm assuming so. Why don't you have, let her come up to the microphone.
Do an environmental specialist one, but there was no change in salary between the one and the two, really. So it was at the time I even questioned why I even bothered changing the name of it. And after Matt came on board and we started working, it turns out we're both the same title now. So things, I think there was a lot of turmoil because of Dawn retiring and a little bit of time there when, and then Springstead came in right after that. I know Dave Hansen was there doing the reevaluation, and then it went into Springstead. So I think maybe we got the short end of things on that.
So what you're saying is that at the time that this salary evaluation was going on,
mm-hmm.
you guys were in the process of ramping up your department.
Yes, exactly.
Up there yet.
Correct.
It was probably one of the worst years professionally, technically, that I have ever lived through. That was the worst year.
From 09
so
to 10.
That year. Health-wise, I mean, it was just very bad. And we requested help, and we didn't get it. And so Kathy and I ran that as best we could. And then we get hit with this HR, write-up. It was like, it was...
This salary survey wasn't done until 2011.
No, but the the request to start writing it up because we had to start hiring people. That was the basis of it when they was there. Mm-hmm.
You're starting to put stuff on computer, weren't you, too? Doing the switchover for the records and the computer?
And then, you know, the other thing, the county has you work in a vacuum. When you work on these HR job descriptions, I work on mine, and somebody else works on his, and then they all come together, and then you realize, oh, well, they did 5 pages, and I did 1 page because I thought that that was how they wanted to do it. So no, you know, you just get, you turn in what you thought was the right way, but you don't know how the other directors were doing it. So my 1 page had to stick with their, compared to their 5 pages, and I, you know, without the opportunity to redo it, you know, just, and because theirs is longer and more eloquent, they might be considered as harder workers or more in their job description. You know, it's just they have you working in a vacuum, and that's not a good way to do it. We did not meet around a table. We were given packets to fill out and turn in.
Yeah, I you know, going back to what you said, Dr. Passion, I think a lot of it had to do with the turnover in the department, our department, and moving forward in moving and building on what we had left and then going forward. So, you know, it's unfortunate, but I think our department suffered because of it.
So, Paul, when would we normally, if we were to make adjustments on their salaries, does that normally come prior to the county's budgeting process? And then,
well, yeah, I mean, the budget packets go out in November to the departments, and typically, when they're doing their budget work, salaries aren't included in that. That's left up to the board. So if this board wants to sit down with the Board of Supervisors and have a discussion about salaries, I would suggest we do a special meeting next month to sit down with the Board of Supervisors and discuss the salaries for the Environmental Health Department. If we wait until our December meeting, it's going to be too late, I think, in the budget process. I think if we sit down in November and have a discussion with the Board of Supervisors about salaries, but I think you're going to need some direction on where you want to go.
So the budget doesn't include salaries, you say, and that you guys are doing in December?
Not until it's certified. Typically, the board doesn't add the whatever percentage we think we're going to give. And up until much before the budget is certified in March, we have a figure in mind what it's going to cost us and what that increase, total increase for all the employees, will add to the overall budget.
So, like our department, when does the supervisors need our recommendation? Just like the conservation board of everything.
Early in December, I think, typically isn't it the deadline when the packets are due back to the auditor's office is sometime early in December.
Yeah.
This board, if they want to meet with the Board of Supervisors, will need to sit down sometime early in November and discuss which direction you think you want to go with salaries for environmental health.
Oh, so we do that with the supervisors, not just as a board on ourselves.
And I think, and we have not done this since I've been here, but I would assume, and I don't know, Margaret, if you can shed any light on how it was done in the past, if the Board of Health makes a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors for what they think an increase should be. I mean, and I think we're talking about two different things. You know, there's the discussion about the job description and what the salaries are currently, and then any type of increase that you would see, if you want to call it a cost of living increase, typically is what it's referred to, but that would go into effect next July. And that's when I referred to it, the 2%. That the county employees have gotten.
Well, we used to make that recommendation. That's what we used to do.
Well, you'd recommend the budget, I think.
Yeah. In the budget, we would.
But the budget always, the budget that I would present or that Don would present,
right,
would always hold those salaries the same as the previous year as per instruction.
But somewhere along the line, as a board, we would increase that or leave it the same or whatever at some point.
and then that would go to the supervisors, and then they would say yay or nay based on our recommendation, right? Is that normal procedure?
Well, that would be normal. I mean, and I can tell you, it would be very, as far as the cost of living increase, it would be very untypical for the environmental health employees to get any cost of living increase any different than any other county employee would get.
So this 2%, was that basically cost of living? That was that before.
Right.
But as far as anything other than that, that we would, that has to come from us.
Currently, the county doesn't have any mechanism for step increases.
Right. That's what we're talking here.
That's one thing that we are trying to work towards is merit pay. And that's one of the, we haven't instituted yet, but that's one of the things that we're working towards. So that's on the horizon.
So what we would have to do with the Board of Supervisors is we'd have to go in front of them and say, first of all, that as part of their job description, professional has to be included in it.
Right.
Okay? Which to me sounds like an easy sell.
I would think so. I don't know that this board ever acted to accept these job descriptions or not. I don't. We would have to go back and see if we ever did. I don't know if we ever did or not.
I don't recall it.
Yeah, I think at some point you accepted the county's employee handbook.
So maybe that by default. Yeah, I don't know.
You would have to sit down with with the Board of Supervisors and talk to them about the job description.
But it should be you guys.
Great. Yeah.
Because we're the supervisors.
Yeah, we're it's like the Conservation Board or the Emergency Management Commission. I mean, technically, Margaret and Matt and Kathy are employed by the Board of Health. So. But I can certainly make arrangements to have a meeting in November, sometime in early November, with the Board of Supervisors.
And then if we do that, then is the next step to say that a proposal for any raise, or would the fact that we change their description automatically bring them up to another level? Or
I'm not certain what the change would do from professional to, or from technical to professional.
Who do we ask?
I can find that out. I can talk with our HR director.
I think that'd be good to do.
Because that keeps coming up on these discussions. It keeps coming
right.
up. And I think that it's not only the fact that they're saying that they're seeing people who work next to them make as much, but what I'm hearing from our people are is that they're saying that it's more of, well, why are they making more? Well, they're more professional and we're more technical, but they're a mixture.
Sure.
I would, however the motion should read, I'd move that we do that, have that meeting with the supervisors and discuss those 2 points. Because we've had 6 or 7 meetings now over this with the same discussion. We're different than we were before, except I think the level of frustration is higher.
I think we've gotten some facts out.
And I think the arguments we're at the point.
Yeah, I agree. I would like to know about that, if it's changing that from professional.
Technical
professional would increase
that. That was the reason they were.
And see what that increase, if there's an increase, what that would be on that part of it.
Paul?
The two boards come together, I guess my question is, does Paul want both boards, which side of the
fence,
or would you just...
I'll just stay home that day.
Smart move.
And just so everybody knows, my term is up at the end of December.
Oh, it is? I didn't realize that.
On this board.
Oh, and you're not going to continue?
No, I haven't decided yet.
And
that's one of the other things that, my first Board of Health meeting, I was elected chair because the supervisors always get elected chair of the Board of Supervisors.
That's what Jane always did. So
there you go.
Also, could I ask or mention if their pay grade were to change, say, from 9 to 10, and say the minimum and the maximum would change,
does the Board of Supervisors, they still have to ask them what, if they're below the minimum, what would happen?
Right.
Right?
Because ultimately the Board of Health is funded by the Board of Supervisors.
I mean, even if their pay range were to change, the Board of Supervisors would still have to make the determination on what they're going to do about that.
I would assume so, yes.
Well, actually, the Board of Health, because the Board of Supervisors gives you an economic development, and then it's up to you guys to decide where, what, you know, if it's budget you're in, and you get $3,000 a piece of building, you can use that money to, like, wait it or your public health. So the Board of Supervisors won't bring in that money over to you guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. The motion is for me to set up a meeting with the Board of Supervisors to discuss salaries for environmental health employees and job description. So we've got the motion. I need a second. We've got a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Okay. Anything else?
No. I'd just like to thank you for your patience and your motion on this.
I think you guys are doing a really good job. I do, and I'm just speaking for myself, but I really think that you guys are doing a very nice job. And again, it's being able to watch this over the years and the more things that are being done and stuff. And at the very least, your reports are much more
interesting. And I don't want anything that I say here today to be construed that I don't have hold all of you in the highest regards. Margaret, I think you do a fabulous job running that department. And the thing that you do, you've taken on the manure management and the master matrix without question, and you've done a job that I don't know that anybody else could do. And I certainly don't want anything that I've said here today to make you guys think that I don't appreciate the job you do or the position that you're in.
Thank you.
No, I would put our health, the environmental health department, up against anybody's in the state. So, all right. If there's nothing else with that, the next item we have on our agenda is discussion of the FY15 budget.
I have nothing to. I really have nothing to say. I just wanted to give you an opportunity to present items coming up that you think of, being the Board of Health. The car is running fine, so I don't think, you know, that's the only big ticket item that would affect our budget. I think we're good for another year at least with that. So, and you might
any big equipment purchases or anything. I know at one point you thought about a different type of soil probe.
We're up to the dynamite level now. I just can't do
back hose.
I want a backhoe. I don't know the answer to that.
A mini excavator with a trailer can pull behind your truck.
You know, if there is anything that anybody thinks of between now and this meeting we're going to have in November, we can add that to the agenda and have that discussion at our meeting in November. So.
And will that meeting include staff, or will it just be the two boards?
It'll be a public meeting, so.
Okay.
Anybody is
welcome. But we won't be required to talk. We can just show up. Okay.
Yeah.
Just out of curiosity, when are those usually held? Like in the evening or in the morning or the afternoon?
Which one? For us?
The one.
We can, if you guys would rather schedule it in the evening, we can try that. If not, we can figure on a.
Because that's the only way for sure.
Okay. Well, let's just see what the first Tuesday, because that's normally when we meet. November 5th.
Yeah.
Let's put that down for a tentative date, and then we'll go from there. But we'll hope, yeah. Definitely, if we're going to do it during the day, we'll have it on Tuesday.
Thank you.
Tuesday afternoon.
And actually, and just in an evening in the first...
Huh?
So the 10 days in November should be okay, because for some reason I'm not on call the first 10 days.
Oh, okay. All right.
In the evening.
All
right. So will that be at 2 o'clock then? Is that the time we're going to shoot for?
Yeah. That's election day. Oh, crap. That's election day. That's not going to work. We won't be able to do it in here. Yeah.
let's leave it that date and let me do some checking.
County government's not shutting down.
No.
We don't need that federal.
All right. Okay. No public hearing items. Any staff comments? Any board comments?
I believe you.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We're adjourned.